You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe. It simply means, so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. After all, it is Friday. For those who got to do that thing from 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, this is a good day. Living for the weekend, that's for sure. But I hope you get a chance to do all the things this weekend that you want to do, need to do, should do, must do, will do, and can do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, I know brothers and sisters will get it done. Got to get it done. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives, and that is timeforanawakening.com. Look for the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed and click on that, where you can go to previously recorded programs that are dated and titled. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, all times they're going to give are Eastern times, so you just please make your adjustments. After Acres of Diamonds on Monday from 6 to 8 is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Fridays, today's Friday at 8 p.m. this evening on Friday. Guess what time it'll be, brothers and sisters? That's right. It'll be time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard from 8 p.m. on Friday. And then on Saturdays, tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 12 noon is Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., not me, Sister POC, with her program Revive from 11 to 1. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. is once again time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We by Black. I'm going to try to run through these. So I know a little late. Had some technical difficulties. You know, sometimes these difficulties are no fault of your own. You just got to be patient and let the process happen, and it did, and we're on, and hopefully I'm sounding good and sounding okay. I don't know about being good, but this, I'm sounding, and you can hear. That's the bottom line. And so we're going to run through these promos that I give. And the promos that I give, and I am not getting paid for them. I don't seek the payments. What I seek is sending out information. That's what this program is about. Providing information that will help us make good, wise decisions as we move towards liberation, as we move towards independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for us as our African people. That's why I do this. That's why I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, because that's my contribution to helping to do something for African people. Put something on the minds of African people, because as Stephen Biko says, what I end every program with, the most potent weapon in the hands of these crackers, the oppressor, is the minds of us as being oppressed. And so that's why this program exists. This program exists to help change the African mind by instilling knowledge of self. So let's continue on. Get everything you need from black-owned businesses. Let's buy black. WeBuyBlack.com, largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. We Buy Black. They also have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall, so check them out. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. My brother, Bomani Tahembe, he went to Africa last month, took a good group with him, and they're back. And I'm quite sure there's probably some video and there's probably some pictures of that trip, like it was from the May trip. And of course, the reason why I'm announcing this, because he's having a May trip again next year, May 2019, 400-year anniversary of us being in this madness. And so you too can physically get up out of this madness and go home to visit, or go home to prepare to stay, like me. Okay? AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. You can email him at the abbreviations for Africa for the Africans, AFTA2010@msn.com. Or give him a call. Give Brother Bomani Tahembe a call at 404-404-931-9429. And you'll check out the photos on Facebook.com/Bomani, or check out the videos at YouTube.com/Bomani2007. The bookstores, number one, not number one in any numerical order, but just as I announced them, and that is the Shrine of the Black Madonna, located 946 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard, Southwest. The number to call is 404-549-8676. 404-549-8676. Not only do they have books, they have furniture, they have clothing, they have artwork, they have all kinds of good stuff. They have a museum there, a Holocaust Museum. I mean, they have the classes that Brother Olatunji puts on every Saturday, free and open to the public from 1:30 p.m. Eastern until 3:30. p.m. 2-hour course right there at the Shrine. So check out that. And then also too, they have, which is of course, if you are a history serious about our history, there is a, he have compiled in a multimedia library over 4.5 terabytes, and I understand that's just a huge amount of stuff. Huge. He has over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books to be downloaded for you. Once again, the number to call the Shrine. But you can also call 404-444-6696. 404-444-6696. The Shrine of the Black Madonna. Other bookstore, of course, in the Greenbrier Mall is the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Please go there for Kwanzaa gifts. Please go there for Kwanzaa gifts or holiday gifts. Whatever the hell you want to do, go there. Black Dot, there's Cultural Center and Bookstore. There is Light in the Black Dot. And, of course, they have books and all kinds of good stuff at the Black Dot. They also sell the red, black, and green shoes. So does the Shrine. They sell the red, black, and green shoes, the NASCAR shoes. And of course, Brother Jamu, along with Brother Ankh, they're there. And, of course, Kwanzaa will be at the Shrine on the 27th, and I'm hosting that with Brother Ankh. Let me get that information for you. That's right. I'm hosting Kwanzaa with, and our whole thing is Kujichagulia, the second day of Kwanzaa, and it's free, of course, and it's on the 27th at the Shrine. Sister from Chattanooga, Tennessee, Sister Charlotte Williams will be one of the speakers. And, of course, Dr. F. Key Slaughter from WAOK 1380 AM radio will be our keynote speaker as well. So we have two good keynote speakers. And, of course, myself, Brother Tut, who is with WADU, which is the World African Diaspora Union. And, of course, I'm representing ASCAC as well as African Perspectives Radio. So ASCAC Atlanta. So it's on... The 27th, the doors open up at 6, and then we'll be supporting the vendors at that time. And then at 7 o'clock, our program begins, and then support the vendors afterwards as well. And that is going to be Kuji Takalia on the Thursday. Then on Saturday, the 29th, we're going to be at the Black Dot. And that's where I got that at. I passed it. Let me go back and get it so I can make sure. Because that's going to be a very good Kwanzaa as well at the Black Dot. And I am going to be the host. I'm going to do a libation and host the Kuji Takalia, the Ujamaa Day of Kwanzaa on the 29th. And the keynote speaker will be none other than Baba Mwalimu Baruti. Baba Baruti will be the speaker on that day. So I'm very honored to once again to do Kwanzaa on the 27th as well as Kwanzaa on the 29th. So, ULU, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. They had their broadcast last night. They broadcast every Thursday night at 9 p.m. And the number to call to listen or to make a comment, question, or concern is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. And, of course, we have ULU Cafe, which, of course, we came out of that co-oping concept, pulling our monies together to do for ourselves. You know, that's what Kwanzaa is all about. And, of course, our place is at this 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza, 2036 Sylvan Road. And our hours are Monday, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we sell coffee. It is a coffee house and internet cafe, and we have African coffee, Cameroon, Tanzanian, Kenyan, Ethiopian, much more, Brazilian, Panamanian, Nicaraguan. Oh, man, we got coffee, loose teas, and everything at Cafe ULU is produced by us. Go online, check out Cafe ULU, CafeULU.com, and also check out usliftingus.com to become a member and to support it. Go online to buy products, buy some Kwanzaa gifts, again, or holiday gifts, whatever. Ambrosia, we have a drink at the cafe, and it's called Ambrosia. And it is by Brother Novak Young, his mixture. And it is delicious. Ambrosia. You want to check it out? Give him a call at 678-508-7254 where he'll even send it to you. Or go to his website, CompleteOneBitty.com. I'm going to break down the drink next week and some other stuff next week for you. So you make sure you know what you're getting. Okay? Our daily readings. Our daily readings from Yeinsei Sim, Revolutionary Thought. This is a good one to read the day before. This was yesterday because today is the 14th. And, of course, I'm going to read today. And I'm going to take a couple of other pieces out of this book because of the subject I'm going to be dealing with today, of course, is power, fear, power, and fear. Well, go through that. But this one is a pretty good one. Robin Taylor Nixon made this particular quote, this particular statement. We can no longer allow them to undereducate, miseducate, and control the minds of our beautiful youth, turning them into Negro puppets of poison who feast upon filthy diet of their own self-hatred. Baba Baruti's narrative. We must learn to distinguish friend from foe. While we know that an aggressor against our conscious Africans is wrong, defending oneself, one's family, one's community, one's nation against confused Africans is not. I repeat, aggression against other conscious Africans is wrong. Defending oneself, one's family, one's community, one's nation against confused Africans is not wrong. We must defend ourselves against all threats against our Africanness, no matter who is challenging it. There is no difference here between non-conscious Africans and Europeans or any others who act against African interests. And history makes our relations with Europeans abundantly clear, although knowing more of the details of the magnitude of their genocidal efforts towards us can be useful. There really is nothing more we have to know. Toward them, their Negro watchdogs, and any other non-Africans who have proven that they consider assaulting and exploiting us is an inalienable part of their constitutional human rights, we cannot possibly be aggressors. Such people have already committed innumerable aggressions against innocent, warm-hearted, loving Africans without cause or justification. Consequently, our duty is to simply stop this onslaught and prevent its reoccurrence. Affirm, I distinguish between friend and foe. Affirm, I distinguish between friend and foe. December 14th. Although we live in a society with other ethnicities, including Europeans, there is no reason why we Africanize should allow them to join us in anything we do. Can't we Africans have at least one thing for us without Europeans being there? Brother Buckner. The idea we are here to introduce Yorugu to a spiritual side and humanize them is about as revolutionary as committing suicide to make our enemies feel bad about how they treated us. You know how that is. Somebody commits suicide, and I'm going to make them feel bad because how they treated me. And once I commit suicide, they're going to be all hurt and broke down, and their lives will be just, yeah, right. See ya. The most prominent strategy in this self-appointed misery is reflected in the white face syndrome, a progressively regressive condition causing Africans to believe that Yorugu must be a part of, be at every activity Africans have. Now, you know, I remember, and I love Brother Claiborne Benson in Milwaukee with the Wisconsin Black Historical Society because he has kept Kwanzaa alive all these many years, because Milwaukee's one of the first, along with some a few other places, that began Kwanzaa. When in 1966, when it was created, Milwaukee was one of the first ones to celebrate it, particularly in people's homes. But Brother Claiborne started celebrating it openly, publicly, when he got the Wisconsin Black Historical Society together back in the late 70s, early 80s. So I appreciate him for that. But I remember a couple of times he brought a number of Caucasians in, and that kind of upset of some of us. Not that they cannot come to Kwanzaa. No, they can. And not can. And it's not that a concept of Kwanzaa cannot be shared amongst other ethnicities or other, quote, nationalities. It can. But sometimes you just want our space. Celebrate in our way. Since sentiment is based on a possibility that some of us will rub off on some of them, this is no more than the other side of the sub-sect integrationist effort to infiltrate them as emissaries of human compassion in hopes of using moral persuasion or moral suasion to make them feel guilty enough to love us. Accordingly, our life's work comes down to little more than saving them from themselves. As always, in this insanity, even consciousness still enslaves some of us. Europeans remain at the center of our thought and our behavior. Our ancestors were not beaten, raped, murdered, fractured. They did not suffer the indignation of deculturalization and dehumanization for us to save their destroyers. That would only be a cross voluntarily borne by the vanquished, mental slaves, regardless of their knowledge of base and their knowledge or lack of knowledge of self. Affirmed, destroyers are unwelcome in my personal or communal space. Affirmed, destroyers are unwelcome in my personal or communal space. We have a lot to talk about today. We're going to jump into it, get right to it, and talk about fear and power. In fact, I was, you know, in terms of power, I love Dr. Wade Nobles. Quote, I thought, and I still think, it is the most definitive definition of power, because many people talk about power, going to empower the people. People will be empowered, and, you know, power is information. Power is knowledge. Power is education. Power is political. Money is power. All these things. No. None of those things are power. That's a statement. But none of those things are power. What is power? Power is the ability to define reality, then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. Europeans decided, once they came after the, when they came out of that dark age, Europeans decided to go around the world taking everybody's stuff in the name of. Let me see what I have here. Is that right? Okay. Europeans have decided that they may have warred amongst themselves, but they're going to come together on those who are outside of themselves. Those who are non-European, and we're going to subjugate them, and we're going to impose our culture on them. That's power. They shaped and fashioned things in their image and in their interest. So when they encountered those people, it wasn't trade. It wasn't bartering. It wasn't integration. It was straight up, all out genocide, murder, and theft. Straight up. Because if you didn't succumb to what they were bringing, whether it was the Christian religion with the image of a Caucasian Jesus, or whether it was their just whole modality of what they wanted to do, you were going to be done. Power. The ability to define reality. Then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. And the Europeans define what that reality is. And the question that we as African people, we need to ask ourselves is, who are we in the crackers' reality? Who are we in their reality? First, we were the soulless people. No culture to speak of. Never having done anything. Running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, waiting for civilization, waiting for crackers to bring us knowledge. Of course, nothing could be furthest from the truth. But that's who we were then. Justifying enslavement, as I've read many times from what Caucasians have said, because Caucasians believe that. Caucasians believe that really, in some sick way, by enslaving us, we're also civilizing us. That's who we were in their reality then. In fact, it came to a point that if you dealt with this history, you will come to understand that many Caucasians believed that this process of enslaving African people was so good, it made us docile. It made us, you know, in justifying. And so when the situation flipped, and we got so-called emancipated, then that whole idea flipped. So now no longer were you the happy-go-lucky, y'all's a boss. Now you were a menace. Now you were ugly. Now you were threatening. Now you got to be subdued. Now you got to be imprisoned. And, of course, that's where slavery by another name, mass incarceration, people being imprisoned because of loitering, put into those prisons, and then you get jobbed out to a coal mine or plantation or railroad. Yeah. So that's who we are today. Who are we today? Thugs, drug addicts, no fit fathers, no fit mothers, the scourge, the scum. Fit to be disposed of. And see, we still don't understand why we don't have real power. We will never have power in their system. That's why people who use that word must understand, don't even use that word, because we'll never have power. Not real African power in their system. In fact, we'll have nothing even the semblance of power, because it is theirs, not ours. Let me let Wade Nobles, clinical psychologist in the Bay Area, explain this. Because in that way, brothers and sisters, we'll have a deeper, clearer understanding of what power is and what it isn't. Dr. Wade Nobles.
I'm going to begin by talking about the importance of the ancestors, because it is important that we recognize and build from a framework. Sister mentioned that we need to listen to what we're saying and then think about it and try to apply it in our lives. And it is, in fact, from Daughters of the Dust that Nana Passant teaches us. She says, it is up to the living to keep in touch with the dead, Eli. Man's power doesn't end with death. We just move on to a new place. A place where we watch over our living family. The ancestors in the womb, they are one. The ancestors in the womb, they are one. They're the same. Those in the grave, like those across the sea, they're with us. They're all the same. The ancestors in the womb, they are one. Call on your ancestors, Eli. Let them guide you. You need their strength. You need their strength. I need you, Eli, to make the family strong again, like we used to be. Call on those old Africans, Eli. They'll come to you when you least expect them. They'll hug you up quick and soft, like the warm, sweet wind. Let those old souls come into your heart, Eli. Let them feed your head with wisdom that ain't from this day and this time. We are searching and seeking the wisdom that ain't from this day in this time. We are essentially groping to grasp the epistemological framework and paradigm that centers us in the universe. Our poetry and our philosophy are one. Our science and our military are one. It is in understanding these epistemological issues, understanding what is knowing, understanding what is reality that is African, that breaks us out of this trap of thinking like white folks. And our task is, while we have sort of been able to sneak up on the courage to maybe now and then say we're African, or now and then dress like we're African, or now and then even go to Africa, we in America, as well as in Africa, haven't yet begin to reclaim the way African people think. Now, that's nothing romantic about going back to some time again. It is something that's very essential to us, because it is about the empowerment of a people that distinguishes them from being a population. A people have a sense of cultural essence. A population counts their numbers. A people move against their enemy based upon a violation of their essence. A population waits to see if the army is big enough to take the hill. We have to begin to understand these conceptual differences. In my own work, I have suggested over and over again, is the only one thing that I think I claim is a contribution, is the definition of power. And I want to extend on that today, because I said a long time ago now that power is the ability to define reality and to have other people respond to your definition as if it were their own. If we do not have other people respond to our definition, then they will always have power over us. White folks have said over and over again that black folks, or whatever they dream up, it don't matter. They bring up something, they say black folks that, we say, okay, they have power. It is only when we define our reality do we have power. And the extension or the expansion on that definition is for us to recognize that the most important reality to define is the meaning of your own human beingness. That's what the Afrocentric movement is really about. It is an extension of a people who have been dislocated from their own psychic space. And in that dislocation are now reaching out to understand what is the meaning of our human beingness. If we don't understand the meaning of our human beingness, then all the things that Naeem and Julia talked about can be gone over and over and over again because we're off focus. We allow someone else to define what is the natural male-female relationship. Someone else to define what is the male. Someone else to define what is the female. And we play with those for the 20-year cycles that we do. You know we have these 20-year cycles. We do things in 20-year cycles, which is also off our center. If we did anything, we should do them in 21-year cycles. So we'll have, in fact, the cycles of sevens, which allows us to talk about the completion of the spiritual world. But we get off our center. Power is the ability to define reality and to have other people respond to your definition as if it were their own. And the most important reality to define is the meaning of our human beingness. I believe as a black psychologist that is the struggle. It is the struggle for the authorship of the meaning of what it is to be an African human being that is the moral imperative and the historical mission of the black psychologist. That's the problem. Is that we've been victims of a colonial system that rearranged our minds so we no longer think as authentic people. We think only to the extent that we can edge up on being close to approximating what white folks think. And so we seek after whatever their standards of intellectual pursuit is and try to mimic that as if that's who we are. It is the rearrangement of the mind that becomes critical because Europe's contact with Africa has always been driven by the desire to transform, to rearrange things African into fundamentally European constructs. The only time African people are palatable, and I choose that word intentionally, are palatable to Europeans is when we mimic and look and act like them. So it is important for this society to have us struggling with the question of gender using the same definitions and the same conceptualizations that white women have forged in their quest for a notion of gender equity. It is a systematic process. In fact, we see it most clearly in the agricultural world. The way in which farmers train sheepdogs is to take the sheepdog puppy when it is first born and have the sheepdog puppy to suckle at the breast of the sheep. Not at the mama sheepdog, at the breast of the sheep. And having the sheepdog suckle at the breast of the sheep, then the farmer teaches the sheepdog to look into the eyes of the sheep. Because in looking at the eyes of the sheep, you see what you believe to be your origin. Look at this process. First, you nurture the sheepdog on the sheep. Then psychologically, you give the sheep the image that its origin is the sheep. And then given the territorial imperative or the territorial instinct of the sheepdog, as the sheepdog becomes a teenager, you put into the barnyard baby sheepdogs, your baby sheepdogs. The sheepdog who's a teenager now in time will fight the baby because of its territorial instinct. But what it learns and what it's conditioned to believe is that which nurtured it, that which is its origin, must be protected at the price of other sheepdogs. We are sheepdogs. We are sheepdogs. It's not enough for us to be talking about what them other black folk did. What them other black folk did. We have to look at ourselves and see that we are victims of the same process where we believe that our nurturance, and sometimes, and Ellis told me I shouldn't do this, but I have to use this analogy, I have to use this example. Clarence Thomas probably represents a good example of this. Because being nurtured at the breast of Barbara Bush, being nurtured at the breast of Barbara Bush and then looking into the eyes of President Bush he begins to believe that he is a bush. He is a bush. And any other black man, woman, or child that comes into his territorial imperative will be attacked to the death. Now, that is something we have to understand, because while I use Clarence, the fact of the matter is in each of us. We've been trained that way. We've been nurtured that way. We've been looking into the eyes of the sheep and not realizing what it means to be an authentic African. That's our quest. Our quest to begin to talk about turning away from these images and these notions of systematic reformation of the mind. See, we've been rearranged. We don't need to be upset about it. The fact of the matter is that we've been rearranged. And if I recognize that I've been rearranged, it seems to me that's an empowerment. Because now the task is, how do I rearrange the brother back? How do I rearrange the sister back? It becomes a mathematical equation for us to begin to struggle with this in an analytical way, to look at how, in fact, we can turn that around. The arrangement process is, in fact, predictable. All the results of the arrangement, we know. We see them. Mental illness in the African community is the result of the arrangement. Drug addiction, alcoholism, poverty, ignorance, family dysfunctioning are all examples of our being rearranged. Homelessness, spousal abuse, black-on-black crime, depression, alienation, all those are part of the fact of us being rearranged. Racial rejection, I mean, the fact that you reject that which is essential to who you are has to be the result of a rearrangement. Gender confusion, rearrangement, self-negation and denigration, all those are problems in our communities, but they're the results of this systematic notion of rearrangement. So what do we do with that if we begin to take the analysis and say these are the issues? Then we no longer begin to indict each other about what we're not doing. Our task, your task, is to begin to understand that if this is a result of the rearrangement, how do I restructure the Africanness in us so that we are no longer looking into the eyes of the sheep and believing that we are, in fact, more sheep than dogs? We do that by what Ellis has talked about in terms of energy and motion. That concept is important. When, you know, sometimes we have these conferences, we sit back and think about the titles more in terms of if it's catchy and exotic that we get people to come to, and not that it has meaning and guidelines for us to move forward. It is a meaning and a guideline that I want to work through with you in terms of this notion of energy and motion, because the energy and motion really is a euphemism for understanding the African spirit. That's what the energy in motion is about. It's about understanding the African spirit, and that understanding of the African spirit is what is being driven or worked through. We're struggling with these issues. It's not finalized. But the, in quote, Afrocentric scholars, the African-centered scholars, are struggling with trying to understand this notion of energy and spirit and power as conceptualized in the African tradition. Not as, again, a romantic moment of masturbation with the past. It is, in fact, a life necessity for us to understand what are the templates and the blueprints that we can pull out and utilize, as Nyan was saying, in terms of having the ideal. The ideal gives us the guide and the groundwork for building the future. Afrocentric is nothing exotic. It simply is a concept. And concepts are important because the ideas are the substance of behavior. Ideas are the substance of behavior. If I say niggas ain't shit, that's an idea. But it influences your behavior, because as soon as you internalize that idea, you do everything to get away from who you believe to be those black people. You do everything to downgrade those people because you've taken on an idea that has to do with influencing your behavior. Afrocentricity is essentially a term, a concept that categorizes a quality of thought and practice, which is rooted in the cultural image and interest of people of African ancestry. It is the quality of thought and practice that we have to struggle with. The quality of thought and practice. It is not simply taking away white folks doing painting it black. It is understanding what is the essential difference, the essential uniqueness of our way of thinking and our way of doing. It is, in fact, the Afrocentricity represents the fact that African people as human beings have a right and a responsibility to center ourselves in our own subjective possibilities and probabilities, and not someone else's objective illusions about who we are. Sheepdog takes the other people, they take the sheep's illusions about the sheepdog and make those real. We have to begin to understand and center ourselves in our own subjective possibilities and input.
That was Wade Nobles and his definition of power, as well as the analogy of us being sheepdog. I love that. I love that, how they make a sheepdog, how they take that dog away as a puppy and begin to let it suckle on sheep. So as it grows, it has the idea that it is a sheep, not a sheepdog. And that is what is happening, has happened, and is continuing to happen to us. We're going to take a break. When we come back from that break, we'll go deeper into this idea of power as well as fear. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're going to play more Kwanzaa music, because Kwanzaa, of course, is the most important celebration holiday that there is for us. And I'll explain that as the Kwanzaa celebration approaches. This is from Seven Principles by Kwame Cobb and Shavin Duka. This is today, Kujichakalia. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
That our interests are secure.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. I'm going to go right back into it. So I'm going to get this information out in terms of power. You know, if you have real power, you have no fear. But if you have fear, you will never be powerful. And our problem is, fear is one of the main things that have been instilled in us by the European. Dr. Clark said, to be black and beautiful means nothing in this world unless we are black and powerful. When true beauty has been falsified, I'm reading once again from Inye Sesim, the revolutionary thought. When true beauty has been falsified and abnormalities have been defined as beautiful and the natural focus of human desire, true beauty loses value, except to those who see ugliness and horror as attractive. Our beauty is obvious. The problem is one of power, for in this reality, power defines worth. In a world of polarized opposites where beauty has come to be relevant and superficial, a people's power determines whether the way they naturally look will be defined as beautiful. In Urugu's world, beauty is not colorless. It is the absence of color. It is not curved or full or kinky. It is straight and drawn in lines without depth. Given the power to define beauty and erase the ingrained propaganda that distorts ugliness into beauty, we all can see our beauty. If we are again to be the beautiful people we naturally are, not just an ugly one artificially made attractive by imitating the unreal, then we must cultivate the power within ourselves to redefine ourselves in this world as we have always been, black, beautiful, and powerful. Affirmed. I am black, beautiful, and powerful. Affirmed. I am black, beautiful, and powerful. That only applies for us who have our right minds. When you are in this situation that we're in, and it is global, our people don't have their right minds. That's why we bleach our skin. That's why we spend money. In fact, I think somebody mentioned on the program some time ago, they have set up loan shops specifically for weave. A loan shop has been opened for sisters to come in if their credit is good, or even if it ain't, maybe it might be one of those kind of deals. So that, cause see, some of the weaves cost thousands of dollars, particularly if they wanted to look more professional. They want weave, eye colors, skin bleaching. We have a caller, 602. 602, good afternoon.
Yes, brother. Yes, my brother. What's it? Good morning.
Good morning, Marcus. Good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm doing all right.
Good. Brother. Good.
You know, the thing you say, fear, that power that, you know, puts so much fear on our people. You know, What we have to realize is that we can't be fearful, because even if you are fearful, that still is not going to stop your oppression taking place.
Oh, no.
That's not going to stop the brutality.
No way.
That's a lot of our people, yeah, you say, trying to get close to white people, thinking it's actually a detriment to your survival to do that. You know, so you're right. The mind has been damaged, and we have to correct the mind, because that is where the problem lies. You know, the damage that was done from slavery was never corrected. The psychological damage that the system did to the mind of black people was never corrected. You know, so it's terrible, brother Oshie, but you know what? We have to survive. We have to keep on keeping on, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, we don't have there is no alternative. And I think our people are realizing it more now. This was taking place. You can't depend on no Democrats. You definitely can't depend on the Republicans. So who you going to depend on? We're going to have to turn to ourselves to survive. There's no other way.
Well, you know, Marcus, that's why I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 your time. But the bottom line is we're bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions of our inability, our inferiority, striking fear into us, making us try to feel that if we challenge this somehow, you know, it'll be to our detriment personally and as a people.
It's like somebody... Sure, they say, well, person, the Jews going to the gas chamber. Everybody line up going to the gas chamber.
Right.
And one Jew jump out to the line and start to fight the German. And the other Jew grab him and put him back in there and say, look, what are you trying to do? You trying to get us in trouble? Say, look, we in trouble. We going now to the gas chamber.
You're right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, you know?
You go, hey, you going regardless.
Exactly.
You're going regardless. Why not fight? Why not go down?
Exactly. My brother Washi, thank you so much. Have to go. All right, you talk.
All right, brother Marcus. You have a blessed and wonderful weekend, my brother. Peace to you.
You too. All right.
Yes, sir. Peace. No, because reason why we can't have the power, and once again, I ain't talking about, you know, what we talk about here in this country for us. Has a relationship with the European in terms of power. There is no power in sharing what the European has done. He will never share with you. He's selfish and greedy. So there's no power for us in their system. It is theirs, not ours. The only power is defining reality for yourself. Shaping it and fashioning it in your image and interest. Now, understand something. The definition that Wade Nobles gives, the second part of it, I ain't, you know, too much. I don't want to impose anything on anybody. I do want the part where it says, power is the ability to define reality. I want to define reality for African people in an African way. But I don't want to impose on anybody like the European has done. I want it to be the way we want it to be for us. But the European's thing is, I'm going to shape it and fashion it in a way that benefits me at the expense of you. That's their mentality. You know it. I know it. It's how they function. But yet, for us, we still believe somehow, some way that we can appeal to them in a moral sense. Just like what I read earlier, that we kill ourselves because we're trying so hard to be like them. We kill ourselves and then have them feel bad about what they have done using some kind of foolish moral persuasion. There is nothing that we can do. Remember, brothers and sisters, Europeans suffer from what is called cognitive dissonance. They believe they are superior. And even though there's a plethora, there's tons of information to prove otherwise, but they believe they're superior, and there's nothing we can do or say that can change that dynamic. They dismiss it. They're ignored. They also suffer from fragility. Their egos are fragile. They don't want to hear about the evil that they have done. They want to believe that what they have done has been for the benefit of mankind, of human existence. Just like this Caucasian that I saw on YouTube. He's doing this, some kind of rant. He goes to some kind of, he goes to, I think, Texas A&M or whatever, and they're talking about, you know, expelling him or whatever. I don't know. I don't care. But he's going on this rant talking about how great Caucasians are. And if I'm a Caucasian and or European, and I've seen, you know, that everything has been shaped and fashioned in my image and in my interest, I'm going to feel great about what I've done. And to me, just like I stated a couple days ago about the evil they have done, they consider it a necessary evil. They consider it something that just had to be done for the betterment of humankind, enslaving Africans, taking other indigenous people's land, practicing genocide on people. All of these horrific things that they have done to humanity, destroying the land, the water, the air, all of these things, they feel was a, I don't see if you can feel that, but yes, in their twisted mind, in their twisted logic, in their selfish, greedy ends, they feel it was justified. So, brothers and sisters, as we struggle to rid ourselves of fear, because it is the fear that prevents us from challenging ourselves. How was fear acquired by brainwashed people? Fear is not natural. It is taught and learned in human beings. Of all the learned motives, none has greater implications for personality development and functioning than fear and anxiety. Fear is learned when people are repeatedly punished, frightened, hurt, or killed when they are encountered a situation or enter an area that is forbidden. After encountering a fear situation enough times, a person will be afraid when that fear object is no longer even threatening. Fear is also learned from observation. That is social learning without any direct punishment or threats. A person will behave in consistently fearful manners in situations where behaviors are expected to lead to punishment. In other words, people become afraid when they observe other people like them are afraid of something or somebody. Their fear is passed on like a disease. 646, good afternoon.
Brother Oshie, what's happening, man?
How are you? How are you, Jay? How are you today?
I'm good, man. I just got a picture from one of the brothers of your get-together on Sunday, man. It looked like a beautiful gathering. Look, let me tell you this. There's nothing life-giving in this world in regards to that cracker, man. There's nothing moral about him. If you study his history since he done came within the midst of African people, he's been basically an unsavaged dog. He has never done good by African people. He's never gonna do good by African people. The sad thing is, and I'm sorry to say this, Oshie, but it seems like he done trained other people around the world to treat us the same way.
No doubt.
We have no friends.
That's right. Dr. Clark said it
best. We have no allies.
We don't.
We have no coalition. We have nothing when it comes down to other ethnic groups. They are enemy, brother. And it's sad to say it, because you got so many people pushing this so-called let's have a coalition and all of this nonsense about this global majority. Black people will never win in that situation. We got to separate ourselves from this beast, reclaim ourselves, and then go to war.
We
if
have
we
to,
don't
Jay,
do it, we're
Jay,
gonna be extinct, brother.
Exactly, because Jay, we have to reestablish ourselves as the people who once ruled this world, where people came from far and wide to sit at our feet. We didn't diss them. We didn't kick them to the curb. We taught them.
Not at all.
We taught
them. We tried to educate them.
Exactly.
We tried to civilize them.
Exactly.
We tried to be humane to them.
Exactly.
We tried to be loving. We tried to do all the necessary things that you do towards other human beings. And what did they do? They put their foot in our behinds. And they put our foot in our behinds each and every day. Listen. We at the point in our development now, if we don't change the direction that we going, we're going to perish, Oshi.
Well,
there's no way in hell. Yeah. No, seriously. There's no way in hell. I don't think we're going to perish on the motherland, but we're going to perish here in America.
There's
no way in hell.
Let me say this, Jay.
Poor position,
Jay.
That you got a freak nation having more power and say so in the process of your survival than you do of your own.
Let me say this, Jay. Because of the possibilities that are coming up in the next 20 years, maybe 30 years, because of climate change, you're right. We're going to perish. In various areas where we are, where we have migrated to, people of melanated, people of African ancestry, people of African descent will be targeted because of dwindling resources. The continent will be ravished. I'm going to do a piece on China and what's happening with China in Africa. And, of course, I just heard Bolton that asked, excuse me, I shouldn't say that, but he said something about, We need to check Russia and China in Africa. You know, like what? America is a friend? Like America has done something good for Africa? Like none of them are. But we need to check them because what has happened is America has lost its position in Africa because of its neglect. You know?
My boy was telling me, he was telling me the other day how he was talking to some brothers who go back and forward to Namibia, you know what I mean, Ghana, South Africa, to do business. And he was saying how the Chinese are doing things on the continent that you would not believe. They're intermingling in spots once they gain a foothold in them to basically take control. They're setting up prisons. I mean, it's crazy, man. They're marrying the women so that they could get African citizenship.
Yes.
I mean, you know, seriously, Oshi, what is wrong with us?
You know,
what is wrong with us?
We have a misleadership. Cadre of misleadership because of fear. That's what I'm talking about today, Jay. That's what I'm talking about. I'm trying to help us understand that we have no power because we have been instilled with fear. We're worried about what the cracker gonna say. We're worried about what the cracker gonna do. We have instilled in us a fear. There's very few amongst like me and you and many others of us. Well, no, I ain't gonna say many. A few others of us who reject whatever the cracker says, whatever the cracker does. There's very few of us who have the courage, who have the courage to say these things. Very few of us, Jay.
Yeah. Oshi, it's so bad. You can't say nothing about the cracker. You can't say nothing about the Jew. You can't say nothing about the freak nation. Now, the freak nation just done came into existence over the last 15 years. How the hell in 16 years a bunch of degenerate moral freaks get to the point to where they have more say-so
It's insanity, Jay, and that's what I'm trying to do, Jay.
And when I say something about it, you want to try to top me? I'm with it. Because there's no way in hell I'm ever going to bow down to a degenerate transsexual freak.
Never. Listen.
I'm never bowing down to that animal.
Let me say this to you.
I'm not bowing down to no Jew. Wait a minute. What could you do to me? You can't do nothing to me.
Well, see, that's
you
what I'm... My point, Jay...
You can't incarcerate me. But, because I know my rights. I know what to say and what not to say.
Jay, it's not... Jay, it is not about... Because you and me are the same in that respect. But it's not about you and me. It is about us. The vast majority of our people, unfortunately, on the continent, throughout the diaspora, have this fear instilled in us. Because of what the European Jew was able to do, what Caucasians or Europeans were able to do, what the Chinese are doing, all of this plays into our situation. That's why I'm saying, no, we don't have power. And when somebody talks about empowering us, if they're not talking about instilling independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty, they ain't talking about power. They're talking about acquiescing. They're talking about assimilation. They're talking about integration. They're talking about hope, keeping hope alive. They ain't talking about power.
You missed the famous word.
What's that?
You missed the key word.
What's that?
Inclusion.
Oh, inclusion.
Why do I want to be included with degeneracy?
See, that's the other thing, too.
Why do I want to be included with a cracker? The only thing I like white is my underwear and my teeth.
I don't like white milk.
Hey, listen, I don't consider cashew and almond milk white.
Okay.
So, I mean, because I put vanilla in it or date.
Right.
But the point of the matter is, I'm not caught up in whiteness.
No.
There's nothing great about whiteness.
No, in fact, Jay, my good friend, Brother Teju, I don't know if you heard the program. I had him on a few months ago. I'm going to get him on again because Teju was one of my best friends, a master storyteller. When you talk about somebody who is a multi-talented individual, multi-genius, Brother Teju is truly that. And he came with this thing about white-itis. He says, everything white, stay away from everything white. White bread, white sugar, white flour, all is white, right? All that white, all that bleach is bad and truly white people because we suffer from white-itis. You remember Dr. Fox's book, Addicted to White?
Well, listen, I have to agree with you. I went to the doctor the other day. The doctor said, listen, man, you got to take this weight off. I said, I'm addicted to iced tea, Doc. I said, I can't help myself. I'm addicted to rice, Doc. I'm addicted to bread. And then he said it in a way that he don't know I was thinking about what he was saying.
Uh-huh.
You know, you got to leave, like you said, that white stuff alone. But he didn't know in the back of my mind. I said, Lord have mercy, Doc. The cracker trying to kill me. And I'm letting the other cracker kill me. I mean, but, you know, if you think about it, everything white ain't good for you.
No, it's not.
I don't lie about it. I know the only addiction I have is sugar, bread, rice. Hey, I ain't gonna lie about it. And I'm paying the price for it. I'm not gonna lie about it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying to you.
Like I said, man, you got to make a change.
Let me say what else addicted. Hey, Jay.
Do certain things. We all do.
We do. Let me say another thing, white, that is bad for you. Snow. Let me say this to you, Jay. I come from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And even though these messed up the ecology, because now the first snowstorm in this country was happening in the South. It didn't happen in the Midwest. It didn't happen whereby we. It happened in the Carolinas, and I drove through there. And I, yeah, it's crazy. But let me tell you, one of my fears is I would shovel snow and die. Shoveling snow. But people do it all the time. People get hurt. I just seen a piece on shoveling snow on the national news. 100-some thousand people get injured shoveling snow every 100,000. Damn. And about at least about 40,000 die each year shoveling snow.
AOC, let me tell you something. I ain't going to lie to you. I ain't never a day in my life shoveled snow. I pay some damn body before
I know
I
that's right.
Snow.
I know that's right.
And I'm dead serious. I remember one time I was living with a beautiful young lady, and it was in a house, and it was a family house. And she would get mad because I wouldn't go out and shovel the snow. I said, baby, I'm too big, and I'm not going to hurt my back. And the bottom line is, my money long enough to pay some young kid to do it.
Exactly.
Because he got a better back than I do.
Yep.
And you know how upset you get when my back is out. So listen, I'm preserving this back
for my
duties. And listen, and then when I move now where I live at, I don't have to shovel the snow. It's not my responsibility. But, you know, the reality is, hey, Southern Show, and I saw this study years ago. They were talking about people dropping dead, shoveling snow. Yeah. But you know, the reality is what you just said earlier, OC. Think about this. When has there ever really been snow in Atlanta, South Carolina, North Carolina?
Very seldom. Such a rarity.
If you get it in March, maybe February or March. Who the hell ever heard of getting snow in December?
It happened last year.
It blew me away.
Yeah, it happened last year in Atlanta. I sent pictures back to Milwaukee. We had snow before Milwaukee, which is ridiculous. But that's what time it is. That's what I'm saying to you. That the cracker done messed up the. Yeah, he done messed up.
They don't want to acknowledge the fact. This is what annoys me so much. They don't want to acknowledge the fact that they screwing up the.
No,
the earth.
Because they want to continue to do it. Because it's about money. It is about money. It is not about the... Because in their mind, they have so much money that if it really got bad, they'll put a bubble around their existence with a military force or a security force to protect them. They don't give a damn. They don't care about... Really, crackers don't even care about other crackers because they just consider it collateral damage.
There you go. But think about this, OC. All of these people that have all of this money, you know, I've been around situations where I picked up real rich people. You know what I mean? When I was driving the limousine. And then I would hustle when I would drive the cab. And I could honestly tell you, OC, the majority of rich people kids are A-holes. They're not as smart as they're cracked up to be. So a lot of them aren't even able to really follow in their parents' footsteps. You know? That's why you got an opportunity now of more blacks on Wall Street than ever. But you know something? I was talking with a friend of mine. He was telling me, because he works on Wall Street, he was telling me he's seeing more black women on Wall Street than he ever has in his life.
Yeah.
And not just secretaries, but bankers and stockbrokers and things of that nature.
But see, once again, though, it doesn't make a damn bit of difference because it's not ours, it's theirs. So us going into their systems, us mastering their systems don't mean a damn thing unless we take what we have learned to benefit us, to somehow make us form our own banking system, form our own stock market and so forth and so on. But we working in theirs doesn't make a damn bit of difference. I don't care. It's just like I seen a Facebook piece about this whole big family, about 6-7 of them. All our doctors. So, just like I've seen,
opening up a hospital for African people. Yep. What the hell? What the hell good is it?
Exactly.
Now, if you're doing that, then that's what I'm talking about.
That's what I'm talking about.
The thing is, I was trying to explain to my kid. I said, look, why is it when I try to tell you, don't look up to nobody like a Oprah Winfrey, because that nigga ain't nothing but a tool. Why is there only one Oprah Winfrey? Why isn't there numerous Oprah Winfreys? When you talk about white women, there's numerous of white women. Why is it that they done made this Negro something special?
Okay, Jay, let me finish this piece I'm going to do, and I'll explain that, and I'm gonna hopefully we'll have still some more time if you want to hang on.
Just put me on mute.
Okay, bro. The reason why, Jay, fear. They have put fear into us. They open up our heads, took out our brains, and instilled fear in us. That's why there was no gates around the so-called plantation. They had struck fear into us. That's why sister had Armenthia, better known as Harriet Tubman. Armenthia had to have a gun, not for her protection, because of the fearful, scared Negroes, particularly men. But understand, they had to put fear into men. They had to do that by their justifications. They had to. In fact, Dick Gregory said, this is April 16th of Yayin Simse, the free man is the man with no fears. Baba Barudi. For a people at war for the survival of their sanity, compromise and incisions are liabilities which automatically benefit those who seek to divide and destroy them. On this, there should be no confusion, for there is no gray area in war. There is no space for wishy-washy soldiers or those who have misdefined soldiery for an exercise in assimilation. Those who fight the enemy only so that the enemy will let them in. I.e. marching and riots and boycotts and sit-ins and pray-ins and Black Lives Matter and Black Women's March, and I can go on. Being a warrior is difficult calling, and it takes its toll on those earnestly devoted to our cause. This reality can be so very harsh and painful. It can become extremely difficult to see and feel the depths of its blood roots and the breath of its menacing ever awakening moment. So certainly warriors cry. We are human. But soldiers take pain and stride, taking great care not to allow it to sabotage the potency of their fearlessness. We know that nothing is impossible for Africans with the will to do what is necessary and a clear sight of what needs to be done. We only need to have a fearless, uncompromising vision of what a traditional African world would have to be like today to give our thoughts and actions that true aim. We have only to return to what already exists inside of us. It has gone nowhere. We have been, are now, and always will be African. No power on this earth can, and no benign power in the universe would ever think to change that. We are African. Affirm, I am fearless. Affirm, I am fearless. I am fearless in the respect that I'm going to give a rat's ass about what these crackers say or do, considering what has happened to us and what the future, ugly future, holds for us if we don't change our minds, if we don't embrace our Africanness. I'm serious. I'm dead, damn it, serious. When I come on this radio every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, this is not a, that's why I don't call this program a show. This ain't no damn show. This is a program. A program to change your mind. A program to get you to think, to comprehend, to rationalize, to develop a vision of African sovereignty on the continent and wherever Africans are. A vision to have real power, to define reality in our image and our interest. I'm not asking nobody to accept our reality as if it's their own. No, I'm asking for us to embrace our reality, to embrace an African reality shaped and fashioned in our image and in our interest. I'm asking for us. But I know what prevents it. It is that fear of what Caucasians are going to say. Yes, I know. And it's real and it's legitimate. Look at what they have done. Look at how we think. But more importantly, look at the fact that they do kill us on a constant basis. I played that last week where the young lady came on and she was talking about they're not killing us fast enough. And it broke away to, what's Microsoft dude's, what's his name? And he's the one, Bill and Linda Gates, the Gates. And they're having this big ass, inoculation vaccine thing. You know, well, the population is going to be this, but we can, kind of help that out by better vaccinations and other population control methods on people outside of them. The prince who's married to, not the one that's married to the Markle, the other one, William. There's too many people on the African. What the hell are you to talk about too many people on the African continent? But see, you got to understand, that's Britain. That's great, great Britain, the United Kingdom. They dominate and control the world. So they think. And so he's talking about there's too many Africans. And then plus that, because of all these Africans, the wildlife is threatened. Hell, the wildlife is threatened because y'all killing them. All the stuff that has happened to us, poisoning of the water, the food, the air, the genocide that has taken place before our very eyes, and all of those who assist in that, people who are outside of us, all that who supported that. No, that's what the bottom line is, family. Either we're going to embrace Pan-Africanism or we are going to perish. There is no gray area. There is no other choice. Either we're going to embrace Pan-Africanism or we are going to perish. You cannot create African sovereignty if fear keeps you functionally confined to the limits Urugu has imposed on our thinking, speaking, and acting. Fear of what they will do as a result of what we must do cannot be the basis upon which we think, speak, or act in our uncompromising pursuit of empowerment, self-defining, self-direction, liberation, or we will never be able to achieve it. And if those who would allow or who would follow in our footsteps smell our fear, they will never be courageous enough to even look in sovereignty's direction. Because what you can't conceive, you will never achieve. Many of our people, just like Brother Jay said, they don't even think about sovereignty. That ain't even on their damn radar. Sovereignty. They have no idea. That ain't even on their damn radar. Yeah. I'm going to read this other one, too, that I think is most pointed. And then I'm going to open the phone lines back up, and then we're going to talk more about where we are in our situation. Because it is fear that keeps us in the situation that we're in. It's fear. And the only way that we can eliminate fear is embracing our Africanness. It is the only way. There is no other way, brothers and sisters. I know you may want it to be. I know you wish for an easier way. I know that you wish that the Caucasians would have an epiphany and realize the damage they have done, so you could be a part of this nasty, funky pie that they have created for themselves that you want a slice of. I know this. I know it. But brothers and sisters, there is no way. There is no way it's going to happen. We may want it to happen. We hope it would happen. We wish for it to happen. But it's not going to happen. It's not. You know? And I know there's many of us who say these things that I'm saying, and not many. I want to use the proper terminology. I know there are some of us who say these things that I'm saying, you know, because if there was more of us, this situation would be getting more attention and we'd be more directed, you know, but that's not the case. That's not the case. Yep. So I'm trying to find this one I want to read to you. And I read to you before, but we have a caller, 404.
Yes, Brother Oshi Hotep.
Hotep Queen, how are you today?
Well, that depends on how you want to look at it.
Well, hey, you know, the bottom line is, even though, you know, we're in the hell of where we are, but at least we're in the living. And so therefore, there's a chance and opportunity to make corrections, and there's a chance and opportunity to be successful, you know, in our endeavor. So I look at it like that, you know.
All day.
Yes.
All day. All day.
All day.
But to make comment on your commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we are operating out of a fear-based reality through our dual eyes of Euro-capitalism, Caucasian privilege. We are in that. We are living in that. We see that. But we still have that Africanism in our DNA. And when we see it and feel it, it's undeniable, even though we deny it. Also, if they were to turn around, the Urugu, and say, okay, we were wrong, we apologize, here's your money, we accept you now, that adds absolutely nothing to our African reality.
No. You're right.
It adds, yes. It, as a matter of fact, it disintegrates it even more. So we have to turn around and look at our roots, our basis, our African reality. And then my next question is, okay, so now what? What are we going to do, and how are we going to do it?
Right.
So I appreciate you. I thank you. Africa is real. It's alive. But she has invaders and foreigners on her soil, on her land, on her soul.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to do something, those of us who are conscious. And I thank you for your enlightening us and telling us and keep calling us. So, you know, the struggle continues
always
out there with our people.
That's right.
Thank you, Brother Oshie.
No, thank you, Queen. Thank you for your help, and I appreciate you. And let's get Kwanzaa going, baby. Let's get Kwanzaa going, okay?
Let's get it all going all okay. day. We got work to do.
We got work to do.
Work to do. And Brother Jay, listen to me. This is Queen. You got to get off of that stuff. And I will help you to get off of that stuff. That's poison. Get some greens in you. Start doing some smoothies, vegetable and fruit. And it will change your taste bud palate. You know, we all have been through that. But you have to change your mindset and change your palate.
Oh, yeah, he will.
I will help you. All right, brother.
He'll be here. Jay will be here. You know it. All right, Queen. Yeah. Remember, equality is a fool's target devised by lesser men to rob you of your potential. Men who cheated, lied, murdered to get their place in the world. All of you better than that. We are better than that. We were here first. understand that and know what it means. God made us first to lead, not to follow. There is a flame that burns in each of us. And I know my flame is roaring a damn it hot. And I just came back last weekend with a whole bunch of brothers and sisters whose flame is roaring, burning hot. Not 500 years of hatred, murder, rape, or captivity could put it out. It burns purer now. It burns hotter because of our suffering and tribulations. It could light up the world again if we would let it. There is an old European saying, God's first green is gold. It means God's first work is the most perfect work, the purest, the best. It is the mold, the template, the standard by which everything that comes later is measured. The Europeans understand what and who we are and what that means. Until you understand that, you will remain zombies trapped in this damn twilight zone, this purgatory of Western civilization, chasing a damn dollar rather than creating a vision. As long as you do that, you will never reach your true potential. It's really very simple, brothers and sisters. There is no middle ground. I repeat, there is no middle ground. It comes down to this. You can be niggas, or you can be Africans. The choice is yours. And being black, as far as I'm concerned, is being a nigga. I'm just keeping it real. It's either we're Africans or we're not. Not black. Because there's many people who call themselves black but don't want to be African. They want to be black because they want what the cracker has. Many people here in Atlanta would rather call themselves black than ever call themselves African. Now, I know there are some people who don't want to call themselves either one of those two because they sure enough want to be Caucasian. They would rather be white. They would rather be European. But because of what has happened over the past 40, 50 years, there are many of us in this country, Steve Harvey, Stephen A. Smith, entertainers. I remember reading, I did a piece on that, The New Black. These entertainers who have curried favor with Caucasians. We're the new black. It's just like that fool, David Clark. Sheriff David Clark talking about, you know, this is defining the new black, which is, of course, assimilationists, apologists, integrationists, bootlickers, butt kissers, ass scratchers. Jay, let me get you in here before we get out of here, Jay. Are you with me, man?
Hey, listen, tell Queens I pick up on the offer. And let me tell you something. Do you know David Clark?
Yeah, I do.
I figured you did. Is he the type of Toby Negro that he presents himself to?
Yeah, he is. He is sincere. Jay, he is sincere about his Negroisms. He is sincere. You know, I kid you not.
So let me ask you this, Archie, before we go. Have you ever had to step to him and tell him to stop acting like a coon?
No, I have. I mean, I've seen him. He knows who I am. I know who he is, you know, and really we will nod. Hello, you know, that kind of thing. Because I remember when the sheriff's department had a death and we had a community rally at our center that we had at the Brotherhood Hall. And he sat there in the back and he said, hey, I knew why he was there. And with a couple of the cats, he had his cowboy hat on to find out how the community felt. You know, I had to check one of the family members because he kind of went out of it. But the young brother was dying in the back seat of the squad car. He was telling them and they ignored him. And he wound up dying in the back seat of that squad car.
Oshie, you were supposed to get into a conversation with that Toby Negro and just light him up. See, Negroes like that, you gotta light them up. You know what I mean? Because even though they don't act like they understand what you're saying, believe me, they know exactly what you're saying. And when they have that little private moment with themselves, it comes back and smacks them upside the head again and again and again. And that's why, really, they behave the way they do, because they can't accept that type of African truth. But you gotta light them up. See, that Negro No Neck Roland, he tried to light people up, but he got too much Christianity and European values and integrationalism in him.
Yeah.
So whereby he never put forward a real African beat down.
No. And let me say this to you. Let me say this to you, Jay, because my contention is this. I give less than a rat's ass about all of that. And even trying to argue or putting Negroes who have become Negropeans or who have been totally afflicted with the Yurugu virus like he has, because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't do any good. Yes, I can bring the truths out on him, expose him for who and what he is, but he is that, and this society loves him for that. He is that buffer. He is that person that will do the bidding for crackers at the drop of a hat or for a hat. So I could care less about these folks. My concern is brothers and sisters who are just on that fence, who are trying to find their way to understanding of who they are, who we are, and what we can do to change the conditions of our people. And the only change for the conditions of our people is to get out. That is the only thing. We cannot reform this. We cannot change this. We cannot do none of that. None of that. Because Caucasians won't do it. In fact, when they were talking one time about some kind of, and I know I got to go, but it's talking about, you know, redistribution of wealth. Even poor crackers don't want redistribution of wealth, because in their mind, because they believe so much in individualism, in their mind, they too can be one of the 1%, one of the billionaires or multimillionaires or be rich and so forth. They don't give a damn about anybody
else. They want to do one thing, Oshie. They want to do one thing. They want to be able to oppress me and you just like their daddy oppressed me and you. Have a good weekend in OTEP, brother.
You too, Jay. You too, dear brother. Peace to you. Brothers and sisters, in my constant hope and prayer that whatever I can do to help change the minds of our people, I will do. I believe in us. I love us. I mean, I love what we do, but I love us. I love Africa. I love Africans on the continent and throughout the diaspora. And I'm hoping and praying that eventually we'll embrace that as well. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful, safe weekend. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodio family means our victorious days. Oh, let me just say this. Prayers go out to Nancy Wilson's family. Nancy Wilson passed. She was 81 years old. And also to remember those Kwanzaa. Remember, the most important holiday for us is Kwanzaa. The most important holiday for African people, American African people, period, is Kwanzaa. And I'll explain more of that in the days upcoming. Shemhotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you. Abibi Fahodio, our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodio.